Turkey and Sweden are again at odds. This time, Ankara is angry over the burning of a Quran outside the Turkish embassy in Stockholm. And like all NATO members, it holds a veto over Sweden's bid to join the alliance. What is the real state of relations between the two countries? And can they overcome their differences? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Laura Kyle. Turkish-Swedish relations are again in the spotlight. That's after a far-right activist destroyed a copy of the Quran outside the Turkish embassy in Stockholm on Saturday. Police didn't intervene when Rasmus Paludan, who has both Danish and Swedish nationality, addressed a small group before desecrating Islam's holy book. Turkey cancelled a visit by Sweden's defence minister and summoned its ambassador. Speaking on Saturday, Turkey's foreign minister expressed his government's anger.
Now in Sweden, this madman has insulted our religion, Islam, and our holy book, the Quran, and has committed such acts before. This is a racist act that is also a hate crime. When we heard the news, we took the necessary steps. We called Sweden's ambassador to Ankara to our ministry. We made the necessary warning. Our ambassador in Stockholm met directly with the Swedish foreign minister and conveyed our thoughts on the matter. No one can call this freedom of thought. They don't allow the burning of another religious book. But when it comes to the Quran and Islamophobia, they immediately say freedom of expression and freedom of thought. Hate crime and racism are not freedom of thought. It is not according to Swedish law, nor is it according to the decisions of the Council of Europe. According to the European Court of Human Rights ruling, hate crime and racism are not freedom of thought and freedom of expression.
Sweden has condemned the incident. Foreign Minister Tobias Billström said it was appalling. He wrote on Twitter, "Sweden has a far-reaching freedom of expression, but it does not imply that the Swedish government or myself support the opinions expressed." Carl Bildt is a former Swedish prime minister and the co-chair of the European Council on Foreign Relations. Speaking to Al Jazeera, he said the far-right protest had nothing to do with the government.
The Swedish government has nothing to do whatever with what sort of isolated extremist loonies, of which we have some in Sweden. We are not entirely alone in the world in having loonies running around in the streets wanting to do things. And police try to say that they see that they do it at places that doesn't cause any harm. And Swedish public doesn't really take any note. This particular guy has been doing it several times before at several locations. It has nothing to do with the Swedish government.
Well, the incident comes as the two countries navigate a series of diplomatic hurdles. Sweden and Finland want to join NATO following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. As a member of the alliance, Turkey can veto an application and so far has not approved Sweden's request. Sweden is also home to a large Kurdish community, up to 100,000 strong. Turkey has demanded Sweden takes a tougher stance against alleged Kurdish militants, such as the PKK, which is outlawed. Ankara also wants action taken against alleged members of the Gulen movement, which it blames for a coup attempt in 2016. OK, well, let's bring in our guests now. And in Stockholm is Philip O'Connor, a journalist covering social and political issues in Sweden for more than two decades. In Ankara is Ahmet Kayser, associate professor at Hasan Kalyangu University and a specialist on Turkish foreign policy and security issues. And in Oxford, we're joined by Samuel Rahmani, associate fellow at the Royal United Services Institute. A very warm welcome to all of you. Philip, let's start with you and Sweden's freedom of expression. Is it too far-reaching, allowing such a provocative act like this that many countries around the world would consider a hate crime?
I think that's the big debate in Sweden at the moment, Laura, after the burning of the Quran. As mentioned in the report prior to our discussion there, this is not the first time that Rasmus Paludan has done this in Sweden. He seeks to go around. He seeks to provoke this kind of reaction. And he's made it very much about freedom of speech. Now, there's no sort of coincidence that he's going around burning a Quran rather than a Christian Bible, because this is the kind of thing that he thinks is going to provoke a backlash against Muslims in this country. And he is part of the movement that doesn't want to see any Muslims in this country. So far, what he did yesterday is entirely legal. That's the way it's been interpreted in this country. Freedom of speech is, it's a constitutionally protected right here in Sweden. And it's very, very well protected. So as the foreign minister was saying, he may not agree with what was said yesterday, but he does agree with the right to say it. The problem that many people would see here, Laura, is that it wasn't a problem when Paludan was going to Muslim suburbs or predominantly Muslim suburbs in places like Rinkeby outside of Stockholm or Rosengård outside Malmö. There, no minister came out and said this was terrible for several years whilst Paludan was doing it. But now, in the middle of the process of applying for NATO membership, and when this angers Turkey, all of a sudden, the government appears to be taking it much more seriously than what they did previously.
The Turkish foreign minister said there that the countries would not allow the burning of other religious books. Is that correct, or would Swedish laws also allow the burning of the Bible?
I think it's open to interpretation. You would have to say that given that they say this about the Quran, well, then automatically they would have to say the same thing about the Bible. They would have to say the same thing about pride flags, etc. There are anti-hate speech laws in this country, but it's very much, you know, it's very hard to predict what way the courts are going to judge in certain ways. Yesterday, I mean, there was probably more police and journalists there yesterday than there was spectators, and yet not one of them saw fit to arrest Paludan for any sort of heresy or any sort of blasphemy whatsoever. So it would appear that what he did yesterday, and not only that, he had to apply for permission to have this little gathering yesterday. So in to every extent possible, it was entirely legal. Mm. Nobody intervened from the police in that. And of course, doing it at the Turkish embassy was the most provocative thing. So you would imagine that, you know, the burning of a Bible would be equally tasteless, but equally legal under Swedish freedom of expression laws as they stand and are interpreted at the moment.
Ahmed, when you hear this, I mean, it comes down, doesn't it, to simply being a clash of values. Would you perhaps agree that Turkey has overreacted to something that's happened in another country that abides by different laws? The event hardly attracted any attention and, to be honest, received a relatively muted response from the rest of the Islamic world.
Laura, of course, we have to evaluate the issue in two different fields, because first of all, the location. The event has taken place in front of the Turkish embassy. Is that really a freedom of expression? The second issue is this one, because I think respect for cultural diversity, respect to other beliefs and religions should be also a part of freedom as well. Because if you directly start attacking to other religions, their holy books and other holy things, or prophets, etc., then this will go on with other dramatic activities, incidents as well. And this will feed the automatically extremism in every aspect, as we already have witnessed, for example, in France and in other countries also. So there is a very, very sensitive balance here between the freedoms and security as well. I think the freedom of a person should end at the place when the freedom of another person has started. So we should be very careful about this one. Of course, the baseline and the ground for to come together to get a mutual agreement is should be the legal issues and the regulations here. But the interpretation of the regulations may be different from the perspectives of two countries. And of course, the Turkey will interpret it through her own window. And I think she's right at the moment, because in Turkey, nobody will attempt such an issue in front of the Swedish embassy to burn a Bible or something like that. Then it will not be evaluated as a freedom of expression.
You do say, though, that it risks other provocative acts following on from this. I mean, the argument perhaps, though, is that Ankara's response to this act has caused much more of a coverage of this event than was initially there. I mean, there was a protest of a counter-protest of some 100 people who peacefully opposed what this man was doing. It really didn't garner much other media coverage. It certainly hasn't sparked any copycat incidents. It's only Turkey's response to it that has kept the story alive.
I think we should evaluate in this way, because each little fire may trigger another one in Europe. So I think the governments should take precautions, which may have a potential to feed other extremist actions for other communities. Because in every country, there are a lot of immigrants and minorities. So you have to protect their rights also. Because if this starts to be a clash between the cultures and the religions in Sweden as well, for example, then on the one side, Islamophobia or anti-Islamic movements. On the other side, some from the migrant groups, other actions may start, and then this may give pay to other actions, destructions, protests, etc. in everywhere. So I think the governments should be very careful about this one.
Philip, how much attention is the Swedish government actually paying to Turkey's criticism of this event?
Well, I think they're very sensitive at the moment, Laura, just because of the NATO application and because of the sensitive nature of those discussions. You mentioned in your introduction there about the status of the Kurdish people. I think Turkey is trying to maximise anything that it can get from these negotiations before it eventually does allow Sweden and Finland to join NATO. But Ahmed made a very interesting point there about fire, and this small fire may be leading to bigger fires. One of the things that fire needs to prosper is, of course, oxygen. And by giving Paludan the oxygen of publicity, we're actually sort of feeding the fire of what he did. Again, he's done this many times before, and it hasn't provoked this kind of response. In fact, people in Sweden and around Europe, and maybe even in the Muslim world, have tired of what he was doing. I was speaking to a school child recently. He tried to burn a Quran outside a school at one point, and the local kids, you know, tried to provoke local Muslim kids into maybe doing something violent, and they just ignored him, and the protest didn't happen. In the end, he didn't even burn the book. But by us coming and having this discussion today, it's almost like we're giving it a credibility that it doesn't deserve. But it is something that can be used in diplomatic leverage, because Turkey holds all the cards here in terms of, you know, they're maybe, let's describe them as the last barrier towards Finland and Sweden entering the EU. And if they think that there's something diplomatically or politically to be gained by using this situation with Paludan and the burning of the Quran outside the Turkish embassy there, well, maybe that's sort of well within their political right to do so. But as Ahmed mentioned, it does risk fanning the flames even further.
OK, so Samuel, let's look at this. Let's look at the extent to which Turkey is using its diplomatic leverage at the moment and the timing of its protests against what's happening in Sweden, because it was, of course, as we mentioned in the introduction, protesting as well against a pro-Kurdish protest that hung up an effigy of Erdogan by his feet. It's kicking up a lot of fuss about this at this particular junction. Why?
Well, I think there's several factors here. First of all, there's a domestic political factor, obviously. Erdogan is looking towards elections, he's looking towards his political survival, and showcasing Turkey as a strong actor against Islamophobia across the world, especially in the Western world, is part of his domestic image. I mean, from criticizing the forgotten genocide against the Rohingya in Myanmar to calling out Islamophobia in Europe. That's a key part of his brand of foreign policy. In addition, Turkey's position within NATO is probably quite a uniquely strong in terms of leverage, because Turkey is an indispensable mediator now between Russia and Ukraine, and also as a back channel between Russia and the West. How we've seen that bear fruit with the Black Sea grain export deal, which is probably the most significant diplomatic achievement so far. So Turkey feels it has a lot of cards to play with the West, as trying to squeeze Sweden as much as possible in terms of making concessions on extraditions of Kurds and other suspects that it wants to bring back home.
Ahmed, to what extent would you accept that? Is Turkey stalling on Sweden joining NATO, and why is it?
Here, I think there are also three different sides and parties in the issue. On the one side, Turkey, which is a member of the NATO and who holds a veto card in her hands. The second, Sweden. And I think in Sweden also, there are different parties. And also, some parties, I think, are opposing for the membership of the Sweden to NATO. And so we see this kind of incidents, which may provoke the anger of Turkey, and which will support Turkey's opposition for the membership of Sweden to NATO. So we can see this kind of Quran burning or Erdogan's papil hanging or those kind of protests and events in Sweden. So I think in Sweden also, there is not just a consensus on the membership. On the other side, we have the third parties and the other NATO members like United States of America, which use, for example, Turkey has request for F-16 fighters as a leverage. So they say this is these two issues are totally different, but I think covertly this is being used by the American Congress and American Minister of Foreign Affairs as a leverage for Turkey to accept the membership of Sweden. And I think when the time pass, we will see that the negotiations will take on this ground. And I think United States will agree to sell those 40 F-16 fighters to Turkey, and Turkey will accept Sweden's membership to NATO, I think.
Okay, okay, so that's an issue between the US and Turkey. To bring it back to Sweden, Turkey has demanded the extradition of a number of people. Who are they?
Normally during the summertime, Turkey requested 33 people, then, but then it later increased the number to 42, 16 of which from PKK organization. They are embedded to PKK terrorist organization, 12 of which from Gulen organization, 7 from other left-wing terrorist organizations, and 7 are included in the smuggling type activities. So totally 42 people are asked to be handed over to Turkey as being the members of different terrorist organizations or has been involved to different crimes as drug trafficking or smuggling, etc. And most of these PKK terrorist organizations managers who were involved in planning or attack activities, which Turkish people suffered a lot for more than 40 years, are among them. So okay. Till now, Sweden didn't take any step about this one.
Let's find out why. Does first of all, Philip, does Sweden accept the Turkish accusations against these 42 people? And secondly, how likely is it, if at all, that it will extradite them?
There's a bit of a difference there, Laura, between what the government thinks and what the courts think. OK, so the way the courts make their decision is very different to the way the government might make their decision. And you have to look at the cases, all the cases, the extradition cases that come before the courts, what people are accused of, and not least if they can expect a fair trial when they do get to Turkey, if they are extradited there. And how will they be treated? Will they be subjected to torture? Again, will they have the right to a fair trial, to a fair defence and so on? And that's been the sticking point in many of these extradition cases. As far as I know, some have already been extradited and there are many more cases going through the courts. But the sticking point has been that idea of the fair trial and whether or not they'll be subjected to torture when they get there. The other thing is that Sweden has long had a reputation as a sort of a guardian of human rights. Mm. It's a place that many dissidents have come, you know, from Pinochet's Chile to Iraqi dissidents to Iranian dissidents throughout the last 40, 50, 60 years, indeed, maybe the whole post-war period. So it has been a sort of a haven, if you like, for people of different political persuasions. And again, I'm sure the Kurdish people would describe the people being described as terrorists by Turkey as their freedom fighters. So this is the big debate that's going on. And again, they have a very, very high ceiling for this kind of thing. It comes back to freedom of speech and what people are allowed to do politically. I suppose in the post 9/11 world, in the last 20 years, the word terrorists and the word terrorism has been thrown around an awful lot as countries seek to position themselves diplomatically. So again, the Swedish government cannot be seen to try to influence or intervene with the court system. Those two things are entirely separate. And indeed, it goes hand in hand with the way they treat freedom of speech as well, that these things should be independent of one another.
Samuel, how sensitive is Turkey to Sweden's support of the Kurds, real or imagined? Is it what the NATO membership hinges on?
Well, I think that it certainly is a factor. Obviously, Turkey is also trying to take retribution against countries that imposed an arms embargo or were critical of Turkey's past conduct against the Kurds in Syria, so particularly the 2019 Operation Peace Spring Offensive. And that's probably kind of a belated retribution for that. But I think that if obviously there have been a fractious history of relations between Sweden and Turkey since 2010, but if the NATO membership issue was not on the table, it probably wouldn't have been as significant as a bargaining chip. So I think that the NATO membership is really what's driving it. But there is a history of tension and disagreements over Turkish policy in Syria and Sweden, and a general up and down relationship and bilateral nature since 2010.
Yeah, I just wanted to cut across you there, Laura. My apologies. I think it's very important as well to see the Kurdish perspective in this, because these are people, dissidents who came here from various parts of Kurdistan, who feel that they were offered a sort of a haven here in Sweden. And now all of a sudden that they're being sacrificed at the altar of Sweden's application to NATO because Turkey wants to react in this particular way. And there's more than 100,000 maybe people of Kurdish extraction here in this country, and they feel quite betrayed. And that in turn is sort of adding to both the local political thing, but also the geopolitical situation with Turkey. How is this question going to be handled? And yet again, as has so often happened in this part of the world, the Kurds are in the center of this storm.
Ahmed, Turkey has many Uyghur citizens that it shelters within Turkey. It wouldn't extradite them to China. Is that not the same situation?
We can look in that perspective. I think it is normal for countries to have different perspectives, but they should try to have an empathy in this case. For example, if any terrorist organization in Sweden makes bombing attacks and then Turkey starts to be a safe haven for them to live, what might regular Swedish citizens think about this one? So the situation is more or less similar. But I think handing over the people or defining them as the freedom fighters should be left to the, of course, courts, and the evidences should be evaluated in that way, in this way. Not the politicals will decide who will be handed over or deported, of course, within this manner. So we have to respect for the decisions of the courts for both countries. And also the Sweden side should ask for the evidences. And if it's proved that these are directly involved in such terrorist incidents, then I think the precautions should be taken legally in this way. But this shouldn't be a kind of threat for the freedom of all other Kurds living in Sweden. So the misunderstandings should be prevented as well, I think, in this perspective.
Ahmed, is it fair to say that it suits Turkey to be stalling on Sweden and Finland's membership to NATO as it tries to navigate a relationship between Ukraine, but more critically with Putin?
We will see. A very difficult question, actually. Maybe for Finland now, a little bit Turkey is getting more and more positive, because in Finland, I think we have less members, because Turkey was asking only for 6 people. But for Sweden, it is getting difficult every day, because we see the protests and the provocation is increasing, actually. I think some organizations are trying to give destruction or harm to this progress, the membership of Sweden progress to the NATO as well. So we will see, because the Russian war in Ukraine has turned out to be a real threat for some of the European countries, and that's why they do not feel comfortable for themselves. And Turkey for many years protected and has become the front line at the southeastern part of NATO. That's why. And I think today, Turkey also wants other countries to understand Turkey's security threats and evaluations as well, in their perspectives as well.
Samuel,
we should look at it in this way.
I just want to give the last point to you. Do you think Sweden and indeed Finland will get granted membership of NATO by Turkey without them having to sacrifice their moral superiority, their moral superpower?
Well, I think that's a great question. I think that there may be some sacrifices that are made on the edges, like selective extraditions, or selective, which are done by the courts. But I think in general, it will probably be achieved. First of all, there's a tremendous amount of political will inside both Sweden and Finland to get this done. They've abandoned neutrality. Sweden is concerned about a Russian threat to the Baltic states and even to Gotland. Finland is equally concerned about the Russian provocative naval drills in the Gulf of Finland. And moreover, in addition to those conventional threats, Sweden and Finland are actively cooperating with NATO on arming Ukraine, participating in cybersecurity exercises, and also creating an integrated Baltic Sea front. And even if Turkey is more sympathetic towards Finland right now, Sweden and Finland have got to join together. So I think they ultimately will join. There'll be a lot of pressure from other NATO states to make Turkey cave on this. So if Turkey gets some marginal concessions, and if Hungary, as expected, next month votes for Sweden and Finland to join the alliance, I think that they're probably going to join, and this impasse will be resolved, hopefully in 2023.
Okay, it's been a great discussion. Thanks very much to all our guests for joining us today, Philip O'Connor, Ahmed Keza and Samuel Rahmani. And thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, that's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is at AJInsideStory. From me, Laura Kyle, and the whole team here, it's bye for now.